Mr. Brown, rail 12. Right, Mr. Brown, when you came back from leave to England, you came back to the 16th Battalion, just to clarify that.
Yes, I did, at Vildon.
Now, can you remember anything about your last day with the 16th Battalion?
No, I can't. It just seemed to disappear somehow into thin air. No, I don't remember anything.
So there's no kind of night out or anything like that?
Oh, well, there probably was, but it's blurred from memory, I'm afraid.
Now, some of the other veterans have shown us a kind of a leaving certificate from the 16th Battalion, quite an ornate document.
Yes.
Did you get one of those?
Yes, I did.
Do you remember anything about how that was presented to people?
No, I don't, I'm afraid.
So you were posted to the 1st Battalion. Were there other people that you knew going with you to the 1st Battalion?
Yes, there were other people. I think Ronnie Elliott certainly went, and Walter Webberley, and Jimmy Hall, I think, as well. Those are the ones I remember.
What did you think about being posted to the 1st Battalion? You mentioned before the people went to brigade and so on. What were people's feelings about it?
Well, at that time, I didn't know where everybody had gone to. It wasn't until after the war when we met up again that I heard their stories about where they'd gone to. So it was just a case of accepting it.
And where were the 1st Battalion at this time?
The 1st Battalion were at Taranto, southern tip of Italy, when we joined them. They were ready to embark for Greece.
And what was your reception like when you got there?
Just the usual. You got there and you were received, and then you became one of them.
Were there anybody in the 1st Battalion that you knew from prior army service, either at Brandsbirth or with the 16th earlier?
I did meet one later, a chap called Jimmy Olka, and I also met somebody in the signal platoon. I can't remember his name, but Jim Olka trained at Brandsbirth the same time as I did. He went into the MT section, and this other person in the signal platoon, he had come to Durham. I remember him at Durham, but not at Brandsbirth.
Was there a difference in style of how the battalion was run between the 16th and the 1st? Was there any differences that you could pick up on, or was it more or less the same?
Well, it was in effect the same, but this became more peacetime, and I think more disciplined, we were disciplined in the 16th, but I think there was much more overt discipline in the 1st Battalion when we got there and got to Greece than there was that I remember in the 16th Battalion.
Now, you were promoted to Lance Corporal in the 1st Battalion. How did that come about?
Well, I was promoted to Lance Corporal before I left the 16th. I think it must have been a going away present.
So it was literally very late.
That's right.
And you kept your stripe in the 1st Battalion.
Yes.
So what were your duties when you first got to the 1st
Battalion? When I got to the 1st Battalion, I was put into, I think, A Company. And one of the officers from the 16th Battalion, Giff Futter, came into the A Company with me. And I just remember somehow we were having to sort out a whole lot of stores. And I remember Giff saying, oh, this chap can do it. And I sorted out all these stores, and suddenly I found myself becoming company clerk at A Company, I think it was. So for the first few months, or I don't know how long, I was company clerk at A Company.
Now, and you'd moved to Greece in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was the battalion's duties in Greece? What was the battalion doing?
I think we were a sort of outpost for NATO, and presumably keeping a check on the people on the other side of the Iron Curtain and Bulgaria and so on. There was only, I think, one battalion nearer the Bulgarian border than we were. And I think that's what our role was.
And was the battalion involved in any kind of schemes, any exercises that you can remember during this period?
I don't remember any schemes or exercises.
Now, other veterans have talked about how the 1st Battalion had quite a few ex-POW and COs coming back and, you know, resuming their army service. Do you have any memories of that?
No, I don't. The trouble was in A Company, with being a company clerk, you didn't get to know very many people on a sort of close contact basis. But later on, I was transferred back into the signal platoon. And in the signal platoon, there weren't people like that coming in.
And what were your duties in this signal platoon in the 1st Battalion?
More or less the same as usual. You had to do your regular duty in the signal office and get up, do some PT, that sort of thing.
Had any new equipment come in? Any new kinds of radios, new kinds of.
No, we didn't do any training on new equipment. I remember they did do a sort of test for everybody, give us a sort of exam just to keep us on our toes, but I don't remember any new equipment.
What was the test? What did that? What was that?
Well, it's sort of many questions on what you did with this, that, and the other. You know, mending lines and answering phones, and I can't remember the exact questions now, but I think they were fairly straightforward.
Now, you've mentioned Giff Futter coming from the 16th. Are there any other officers came across
Yes,
with you?
Perriam came from the 16th, and he was signal officer while I was in the signal platoon at Xanthi in Greece.
And how did he strike you compared to Harris, Captain Harris, who was a signal officer before?
Oh, I don't think he had the rapport with the platoon that Captain Harris had. It might have been that there were other people from the 1st Battalion in the platoon and some from the 16th. We hadn't gelled quite as much as you do when you're going through a place like Italy during the war. So it didn't seem to be the knitting together of the platoon and the rapport in the platoon that we had in the 16th.
So did you stay with your old friends in terms of socialising and so on?
Yes, mainly.
In terms of the new people that you met, were there any personalities that stood out, either officers, NCOs, other ranks from this period?
No,
Anybody that like made an
not
impression
really.
on you?
No, not really, no.
Now, also, apparently you got a second strike, you were promoted to corporal this time. What do you remember about that?
Well, I think I was away playing football when it happened, because I remember being with the football team when I was sewing the stripes on. So it must have just happened when we were going away to play football, or actually when I was away and the word came through somehow and battalion orders, as it did. I remember sewing the stripes on then, but I don't remember much else about it.
Now, we've talked earlier about how I think you mentioned that you never kind of harboured any ambitions to become an officer. Now, at any stage, and this is like backtracking a little bit, but at any stage, was there anybody, you know, within the signal platoon that was, you know, that had that ambition, you know, that wanted to become an officer?
Nobody that said that sort of thing to me. Whether
Okay.
they had the ambition within themselves, I couldn't say.
Now, what was the feeling generally about promotion?
People didn't seem to talk about it very much in the signal platoon. Nobody seemed to be avid for promotion. We just went on living our lives.
Now, apparently you were moved, according to the, you know, the form that you filled in for the Sound Archive, you were moved across to the education section. What did that entail? What did that involve?
Well, it started off with testing everybody in the battalion on maths and English. For the maths, you'd have so many questions to do in an hour, and the first one would be something like 5,000 minus one, and then it would become more difficult as time went on. And somebody had to mark all these tests, so that was the first job, going in and starting to mark all these tests.
And in terms of the test results, what did you feel about the general standard of education? Were you impressed or?
Well, you don't want to sound superior, but I was surprised at the level, actually. I thought people would have done better.
Now, what other duties would you have within the education? Would you just be doing that?
Well, there was the four of us in the education department, and two did maths, two did English, sorry, there were five, and one did economics.
Can you remember who the other people were?
Yes, Jim Mulca, who I met before at Bransworth. He was in charge of the department, and he did maths. I don't remember his name, but he was post-corporal originally, and he did maths. Roy Jones, who became an excellent friend, a marvellous chap, and myself did English, and Ronnie Elliott, who was also used to be in the signal platoon, did economics.
Did you enjoy this period?
Yes, I did. It was good because we were taken away from the camp, and we had a house in the town. I think it was called something like Marco Bozzari Street. Marco Bozzari Street seems to stick in the mind. And we lived in this house on our own, and it was very comfortable. We could have little drinking sessions if we wanted them, or go out, and it was fine.
Did the army make it clear why they were doing these tests? Was the motivation behind it explained to you?
Well, I think no, it wasn't really explained ever as such to me, but I took it that we were trying to prepare people to go back into civilian life and making sure, you know, that they had a bit of education to go back with.
So if people performed badly in the tests, were there other people that would give them, like, remedial instruction? You know, was there another part of the education section that would teach them, you know, maths and English and so on?
No, there's just the normal, what I've told you. We didn't differentiate, really, between the people who'd done very well and the people who hadn't done so well, mainly because I think it would have been too much to organise with the staff that we had.
So you were actually giving lessons to people as well?
Oh, yes.
So what kind of lessons would you give?
Well, with the English, it's just the usual, what you can imagine, you know, trying to create a sentence which had a verb in, and saying what adverbs were, adjectives, pronouns, getting them to read and try to ask questions to make sure that they could comprehend what they read, and so on.
Now, we've talked about the regional mix of the 16th Battalion, you know, been a lot of men from, you know, from outside of the northeast area. What was the mix of the 1st Battalion like at this stage, the people that you were teaching?
Where were they? Well, just the same sort of mixture.
So they could be from anywhere, were they?
Yeah, they came from all over.
So how long were you doing this work for, these duties?
I can't remember. I was in Greece over a year. And I can't remember how long I was company clerk, how long I was in the signal platoon, and how long I was doing this education work. But the year or so was split up with the three of them.
Now, I just like just something you mentioned off the tape about a football game and somebody shouting out from the crowd. I thought it'd be nice if you could tell us that story. I know this was like a little bit earlier.
Yes, well, it does sort of tie up because I played for the 1st Battalion football and we had a competition for the whole of Greece, and we went through to the finals, and we had to go down to Athens for this final, but there'd been some misunderstanding somewhere along the line, because we played as a brigade group, and there were nine DLI people and two from another unit. But when we got to Greece, we were told that it should have been at battalion level, which meant that we'd played two people officially who ought not to have been on the team. So we were disqualified. So we had to watch the final from the stands. And the final was played at the same ground, Panathinaikos ground, I think it is now, where we had played an Athens team when I was in the 16th Battalion. And it brought back a memory about how I thought people were proud to wear the DLI cap badge, because I didn't finish the story, but I mentioned this big centre-forward, Dougie Reid, and at one stage he was standing a couple of yards from me, and he had the ball, and he was swaying to go one way or another, and I was swaying to try and stop him, and suddenly there seemed to be a hush in the crowd, and I distinctly heard Solly shout, "Show me a cap badge, Bruin." And it made me think afterwards, well, you know, people are proud of this cap badge and proud of the Durhams.
And apparently you showed us a newspaper report of one of these games, and this mentions a crowd of 6,000 people.
Yes.
Was that... Would you often play in front of crowds of that size?
Oh, yes, it was very popular if you played for the division. That 6,000, I think, was in Graz when we played a local Graz team. That was the report in the paper.
And so these games in both Austria and Greece, they'd be popular with the local population as well?
Oh, yes. In Xanthi, we played against the local population, which one game ended in a fiasco, actually, because we scored a goal and the referee gave a goal, but the local team didn't think it was a goal. So the goalkeeper kicked the ball up to the centre to spot off again, and the centre-forward kicked it back to the goalkeeper. And we walked off about 5 minutes later, and they were still doing that. So we never did finish that game.
Now, any other memories of Greece? How did you get on with the civilians at this period after the war?
In Xanthi, you didn't get on with the civilians, especially the women, because if the local women were ever seen fraternising with soldiers, they were condemned. And of course, they still wore the yashmak and things and the dark clothes, and there was very, very little cooperation between the local population and the soldiers.
Why do you think that was?
No idea.
And from the British point of view, did people resent that? You know, you're in another country, you were, you know, trying to make the best of things.
Well, I think people did think that people could be a bit more welcoming because, I mean, after all, we had done our best by Greece, and the Greeks knew we were friends.
So compared to how the Austrian civilians treated the British Army, this wasn't as good at all. How you got on with the Austrian troops when you were in Austria?
Well, the problem with Austria with us was that we were billeted with a family, and you couldn't help getting on with the family, which made it a lot easier.
In terms of the situation for the local civilians in Greece at this time, were they, you know, were they reasonably well off? Was there plenty of food in the shops?
Plenty. As you remember, plenty of fruit. You know, we could go into the town and buy fruit and so on. But I don't think it was a very rich country at that time. At least in Xanthi, the people didn't seem to have a lot of money.
Was there any? Were you aware of any kind of black market activities?
No, I wasn't
at this stage. Now, so you were in Greece for a year. What happened then?
Well, at the end of the year, I came home to be demobbed after serving the 3 years and 3 months Python period abroad.
And how did you get back home? Do you remember much about the journey?
Well, I remember the journey because it can get quite rough around the islands, around Greece. And we had to come from north east Greece down past places like Kavala and round to get to Athens, where we had to get to. And it was very rough. And it was so rough that it was reported in the English papers. And a ship had sunk in that area. So I remember that very well, because when I got home, I found Betty in a state of distress, because she'd been deadly worried that I was one of the people on board the ship that had sunk in this bad weather going around towards Athens. So I remember that. And then we went from Athens, where I saw Bert Newman again. He was our quartermaster officer, and he was in the Athens depot. I remember having a chat with him. And then we went to the south of France, and from the south of France we came by train to Dover, and then we crossed over from Dover.
And did you know that you were going home to be demobbed?
Oh,
you
yes.
That was...
Yeah.
What was your morale like at this point when you were going back to England? What did you feel?
Well, probably very high. Happy to be going home.
And what about your friends? You know, friends that had come with you from the 16th Battalion. Were they being demobbed at the same time? Or did
about the same time, yes.
But you didn't actually go back as a group?
No.
So you came back to England. Were you given a period of leave?
I think we were. Yes, I think we did get some leave before we had to report to the wherever we had to report to. Bit hazy about that.
And apparently you spent some time at Brandsbeth.
That's right. That's where I had to report to when I got back to England.
Now you were coming back to England. What thoughts had you had about your future civilian career, civilian life? Had you made specific plans that you were going to, in terms of job, in terms of employment and so on?
Yes, I just thought I'd carry on with what I'd been doing before the war, because the, before I was called up rather, not before the war, because the job was kept open. There would be a job there for me to go back to.
And you knew that?
Yes.
Now, so you were posted to Brandsbeth.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that?
Well, it was a very bad winter, 1947. And I remember clearing snow. And the next morning, it was there again, and we cleared snow. I remember going down to York to play football. I remember at that time, there was word went out from the government that deserters would be treated leniently if they give themselves up. And one deserter did give himself up. And I remember I was deputed to take him down to Colchester Detention Barracks. So I remember going down there with another chap, taking this fellow to Colchester and having managing a night in London on the strength of it.
Now, what kind of place was Brandsbeth in this period compared to the Brandsbeth that you remembered? Was there any changes?
Well, we didn't ever really become involved very much. We were just, you know, going through the motions. So I didn't have much idea of what maybe the regulars, if there were any at Brandsbeth, were doing at that time.
So it was just a waiting game at this stage. So what would a day be in Brandsbeth? Would you have any specific duties to do?
No specific duties, no. Mm-hmm.
Now, you were married by this time.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any kind of facilities for like married quarters or something, or would it be still barracks?
There weren't any facilities that I knew of for married quarters there. Fortunately, it wasn't far from my home, and I could get home every weekend if I wanted, I think, at that time.
Now, any other memories of that period? Anything sticks out?
No, I don't think there's anything else that stands out in the mind about Brown Smith.
Now, you mentioned Mrs. Brown earlier in the interview that she was in the ATS.
Yes.
And you said that a married woman could, you know, get out of
be demobbed.
So has this happened to her by this time, or is she still in uniform?
Oh, no. As soon as we got married, and then I went back to Greece, as I've said, she made the motions to get out of the ATS and did. And she was back at work by this time.
Now, I should have asked you earlier, you know, throughout your army career, that in terms of your army pay, the veterans have talked about like an allotment, that they would make an allotment mm-hmm. to a member of the family. Can you remember how, if you did that? When you were a single man?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Can you remember the details of that?
Not really, no.
But it was a percentage of your pay?
Yeah, it was so much per day, I think, or so much per week.
Now, how did that change if a man was married in the army? Could you just explain how that worked in terms of...
I don't think I can explain it. You just filled the necessary forms in, I suppose, and said you wanted to change.
And that made a part of your pay...
Going, yeah.
How did you manage on a corporal's pay now?
Yes.
Was that enough to get by on?
Yes, I didn't seem to have any bother with it.
So how did the news of your actual demob come through? How did that work and what did you do and where did you go?
Well, I remember we had to go down to York to... collect our civvy suits and do the last rites, as it were. I remember getting the suit, which wasn't too bad, but the trouble with suits that are not properly made for my size, my shoulders and length of arms don't match with the chest size. So to get the size for the shoulders and to make sure they come down to the wrists, the sleeves, I had to get quite a bulky chest size, which meant that I was carrying quite a bit of bulk in in front. And also I remember the trilby. You got a trilby when you were demobbed, and that was hopeless. I never looked right in that trilby. I soon discarded that.
Were the staff helpful when you were trying to get this suit?
Oh, yes, I don't remember them not being helpful at all.
And I mean, you've described you know, problems in terms of fit, but in terms of choice, was there
wasn't a great deal of choice either. I seem to remember mine was a bluey sort of colour, yes.
And did you use it in civilian life?
I did use it, yes, but... I tried to get something different as soon as possible, I think.
Now, just on that point, in this period after, in the early years after the war, was it possible to spot when a man, another, you know, ex-soldier, ex-airman or whatever, was wearing his demob suit? Did the demob suit stand out from normal suits?
I think it did, yeah. It was just a limited choice of colours and things, so that you got to recognise them, I think.
Now, did you have to hand in any kit that you
I don't remember what we had to hand in, actually, but we must have handed in all sorts of things, but I don't remember exactly what we handed in and what we kept.